All right, we're going to get started. Seems like quite a bit of a crowd here as well. So we're excited to show you a private cloud. The title is a little bit not complete. I walked among you, a few of you earlier, to talk about, we're going to show a lot of the new things, the upcoming stuff, SQL Server 2014. We're going to talk about a lot of its features, especially related to private, and also a hybrid cloud, right? My name is Darmadi Komo. I'm technical PM in Redmond. So with me, Guy Bauerman, he's going to pretty much do a lot of the SQL 2014 stuff, right? So today, we have quite a pack of agenda here. We're going to quickly go through like why Microsoft Data Platform is good for all environment, from private cloud to public cloud and things like that. And we'll dive into the Better Together story. How does SQL Server, Windows Server, and System Center all work together? And then we're going to preview and show you guys SQL Server 2014. How many of you have seen sessions on SQL Server 2014 today? One, two, is it on Always On? What are the sessions?
Hackathon,
okay? And those, both of you are hackathon, okay? I know that our colleague Luis, actually he has a session on Always On Enhancement as well. So definitely check those out, right? And last day of the conference, Thursday, there is a SQL Server 2014, basically demo end-to-end, right? Definitely go to that one as well. My colleague Dandy is going to present that.
And you'll see some features here in this session that you won't see anywhere else, though, that actually no one's seen before outside of the development teams. So,
So let's get going. All right. So a bit of an eye chart. Let me quickly go over with you guys. So on the yellow box here, we're going to talk about a different environment today, right? So no longer true that you only run your application in silo, in one data center. We see them, this is what traditional people do, non-virtualize your own data center. And today's session pretty much focused on more on the private cloud portion. This is where you start introducing virtualization. You start trying to optimize all your hardware and making sure that you can squeeze the most juice out of your hardware in using database application. And then the blue boxes here are all public cloud, whether it's Microsoft, Azure, or third-party service provider, right? Like Amazon, like Rackspace, people like that, right? So it doesn't matter where it is. So we would differentiate between on-premises and off-premises that way, okay? So the reason why I put this slide together is to show you that Microsoft Data Platform, which is based on SQL Server technology, lives across all these environments. Right? We want to make sure that the same technology is being used all over the place. So let me quickly go over that. Obviously, the first one on the bottom here is your traditional SQL Server running on top of Windows Server. This is what you've been used to and all that, so that's cool. How many of you have downloaded our Hadoop implementation, HD Insight Server preview? We already have preview like a couple months ago. It runs on Windows Server, that you can pretty much do your Hadoop operations there, right? PDW is our parallel data warehouse. It's a specialized appliance. You buy in full rack, half rack, and quarter rack, specialized for data warehouse, your enterprise data warehouse. Make use of SQL Server technology as well, and then you'll be able to speed up performance like hundreds of times if you just install in one compared to one box, right? So PDW is specialized appliance for that. And then when you start going into a virtualization, in here I put here SQL Server in Windows Server VM, meaning that you run Hyper-V, you run SQL Server inside that VM, right? So that is the private cloud scenario. Same SQL Server, full SQL Server functionality is in there. So there's nothing that will change for you. I'll go over the features in Windows Server in a few moments, so you know what's upcoming, things like that. And then we switch over to the public cloud, to the blue portion, right? Then we have SQL Server in Windows Azure VM. We announced the IaaS cloud portion of our Azure, I think a few months ago. And you can now run a full SQL Server in Azure, right? So you would take what you have on your on-prem, whether you're running Hyper-V or VMware, wherever, you have to convert that to Hyper-V. Same virtualization stack, but you can now move that into Azure and run as is, right? I think we support up to like 8 virtual CPU and then up to 56 gigabyte of RAM. That's the largest container that we have, right? And then we go over here, the next one, SQL Database Services, or formerly called SQL Azure, is our PaaS implementation, right? So in here, we take away a lot of the manageability from you guys, from customers, so you just have to implement the database. It's quite easy to do, so we hide a lot of the complexity. You don't have to worry about high availability, patching, and all kinds of things. We take care of that for you in the background. You just use the database, right? So essentially, we have two offerings in Azure as far as SQL Server technology. One is full SQL Server VM. That means that you have to configure yourself, you have to install it yourself, you have to do a lot of managing yourself and all that. And then we have this SQL Database Services where we manage a lot of things for you, right? So two different offerings. If you want to know very detailed difference, go down to our booth. We'll be able to explain to you each one of them, what's the difference, right? And then we have HD Insight, the same Hadoop implementation, but in Azure, right? We call it HD Insight Services, right? And then SQL Server, like you know, we have not only just the database component, we also have BI component, right? Our business intelligence component, right? The SSIS, SSRS, SSAS, all kinds of things in BI. We're going to start featuring those in the brand new Office 365. You'll see a lot of the momentum going in that area as well on the public cloud. And finally, of course, you can host SQL Server in any hosters out there, right? You can run it in Amazon, you can run it in Rackspace and all that, right? So this is kind of the offering, we call it Microsoft Data Platform end-to-end, right? Why I show you this thing? Because I want to make sure that you know that we do think about it very hard, we implement it, we want to make sure that we have the consistent experience throughout all these things, right? Whether you run it in your traditional private cloud or public cloud, doesn't matter. Either Microsoft Azure or other provider, you have the same experience throughout, right? What are the experience, right? Want to make sure that you have the same development experience, right? Using Visual Studio-based SSDT data tools, management tools, SSMS, right? You can use that to connect to all of the stuff that I was just talking about, the identity, the Active Directory, security, things like that, and the virtualization stack, right? All those should be consistent, so that when you want to move from one environment to another, Guy's going to talk about a lot of the hybrid scenario later, right, in SQL Server 2014, you make it very, very easy for you, right? And obviously, it's one single vendor, Microsoft, right, single support. All right, so with that, I want to make sure that we cover SQL Server 2014 for private cloud. Some of you probably have seen this if you come on the previous TechEd conferences where I covered this for the previous version of SQL. I've updated to SQL Server 2014, right? So the way we look at it is if you look at either Azure, either Windows Server and all that, they use the same kind of structure, right? So what happens, we have these four steps or four pillars, and I'm going to go through one by one with you guys. The very first one is resource pooling. When you want to implement private cloud, the first thing is you consolidate your existing database. We'll talk about a tool that we can do that, right? Resource pooling is to consolidate. The second one is once you consolidate, you have to make sure that, you know, once you consolidate everything, you want to make sure that it's scale, meaning that you can expand it, you can shrink it as you want. It's going to be dynamic. The third one is now, you want to be able to have more of the self-service, meaning that you want to enable not only IT people to run this thing, to deploy this thing, but also business users, some business users, right? And then finally, you want to make sure that you can measure the usage. This is all about cloud computing, right? Whether it's on your own data center, whether it's Microsoft Azure or maybe Amazon, whatever, you want to make sure that you can do this yourself, right? All these things are the same, right? Similar. Okay. So there are benefits to each one of them, right? So the first one, when you consolidate, obviously, you use less hardware. You reduce your capital expenses, right? And then since you manage very few servers now, fewer than before, then you reduce your operating expenses, thus less power usage. You have green IT over there, right? So that's on the benefit side on the first one. The second one is when you already have that consolidated, you want to be able to scale up and down, gives you the agility. We call it agility or dynamic. You can have many terms. Essentially allows you to move things around much faster versus before, right? A lot of us, I'm sure, grew up in the environment where whenever you want to implement a project, either database or whatever things, you have to request a new hardware, it's dedicated and things like that. Now in the virtualization world, it's no longer this case, right? Just moving VM, copying VM and things like that. Makes it very easy, very agile, right? The third one is self-service, right? Once IT, we're going to talk about how we implement it using template mechanism, it's allowing you to have images, multiple images, using the SysPrep technology, that you can have end user deploy this thing. So it's much quicker than before. You don't have to have the end user install the thing themselves. They can just use the template that IT provided and just deploy. So IT will provide those images. You can control making sure that the images have the right software in there and things like that. So it's going to be faster time to market, right? The last one is we want to make sure that IT is going to be more strategic. No longer is just, you know, basically just making sure everybody can compute, but IT can move their resources to different departments within organization much faster, much easier, because now you can control all these resources centrally, right, using virtualization, right? So these are the four pillars for private cloud, right? And SQL Server lives very nicely in there. What I'm going to do next is to go through each of the features in each of the pillars there, either from SQL Server or from Windows Server or System Center, because those three products work very well together, right? So let's go to the first one. Small font, you probably can't see everything. The first thing that we're going to do is when we consolidate is you want to know how many of them out there, right? How many databases that you have out there, what kind of version, what kind of, I guess, different installation, what's the performance of it, things like that. You want to be able to assess what you have. I'm going to demonstrate that tool to you. And then once you identify those, either you want to upgrade or you want to migrate. The difference between the two is upgrade is from the older version of SQL. Migrate is probably from other databases you want to consolidate. So we have tools for that, right? And then you want to make sure that you're able to move from your physical environment to virtual environment. Every year, I'm going to ask the same question. How many of you already virtualized SQL Server? And the number keep increasing every single year, right? We started with like maybe a handful. Now it's like more than 50%. So it is very good. That means that you ride in this wave of virtualization, pack more things in your current hardware, right? So should not have question about, hey, can I virtualize SQL Server and run it in my production? We used to have this question, like, hey, what's the performance and all that stuff? We should not have that kind of conversation anymore. It's more like, can Hyper-V run my SQL Server well? Right? That's the question that we should have. Okay? So that's the first pillar in terms of resource pooling. Elasticity. There's a lot of new features in both SQL Server 2014, Windows Server 2012, and the newly... announced Windows Server 2012 R2, right? Very good features in there as well as System Center in this area. So I'm going to slowly go through here, and hopefully you get a lot of them. We have detailed slides on this afterwards as well. So the first thing that we want to do is once you consolidate everything is to set up high availability. Make sure that all your resource now, since it's put in central location, you want to make sure it's highly available, right? So let me list a couple of features here. Always on is always good, right, to make sure that your SQL Server installation is always available. So have failover scenario and things like that. We always want you to install SQL Server in production, especially on Windows Server Core. Right, I'll have detailed slide on that as well. And dynamic quorum and REFS support. All these features, Windows Server 2012 feature, and some of them it's already there, like REFS is already there in Windows Server 2012, but SQL Server perspective, we're going to support that in SQL Server 2014, the upcoming new version, right? So we're going to talk about that. And then next is we want to make sure that not only you have high availability, you want to set up disaster recovery. Usually this will be another data center, right? Or let's say in the cloud, in Azure as well, you can use Azure as a disaster recovery scenario as well. So going to support a lot of those scenarios, especially SQL Server 2014. I mentioned earlier there is an always-on session this week. If you did not go there, if you're not going there, then you make sure you watch it later on. It talks about how we can use SQL Server Always On and have a DR scenario in the cloud. So no longer you need to buy another standby machine, right? So you can just rent essentially from Microsoft, right? And just pay monthly there. And it's going to be, with the all the license that we provide you guys, it should be very affordable. Same thing with live migration from Hyper-V. No longer we have limitations on just be able to live migrate one or two VM. Now you can migrate as many VM as you want simultaneously, things like that. All right? And then next is on the VM itself. You want to be able to scale the VM from the perspective of your CPU, perspective of your memory, the perspective of your storage, a perspective from the networking, right? So I list here a bunch of features as well, some of them from SQL Server, some of them from Windows Server, right? You probably heard about Hackathon, right? The in-memory OLTP, right? So obviously you can use it there as well. Guy is going to mention, going to talk about SSD buffer pool extension, so I'm going to leave that to him. This is part of SQL Server 2014 feature. Column store is part of 2012, but we greatly enhanced it in 2014. We want to make it, we make it updatable, that's one. We introduced better compression as well. So imagine you can have 100 times faster performance on your data warehouse query using column store. Now is real time, because you can keep updating it, right? That's in SQL Server 2014. Guy is going to have a detailed component on resource governance as well, the enhancement of it, right? What's new in SQL 2014. And then Hyper-V scale. We're going to have detailed slide on that, but no longer true that Hyper-V cannot run mission-critical SQL Server. Because of Windows Server 2012, we upped the limit of virtual CPU to 64. Right? You can pretty much run a lot of stuff in 64 core, right? and the memory as well. Right? We're going to talk about that in more detail. Dynamic memory is already there in Hyper-V. There is a new feature called Online VSDX Resize in Windows Server 2012 R2. If you didn't go to any of the sessions that talk about this, essentially, now you can resize your VM online, meaning that if you run SQL Server on it, it will no longer have downtime, things like that. You can increase, decrease the size of the VM as you want, right? So it's very, very cool feature there. Tier storage. Right, we'll have a detailed slide on that as well, so hang on there first. SMB support as well, that now you can allow SQL Server to store your data and log files remotely. You don't need expensive SAN anymore. And NIC teaming and QoS is on the network card portion. I have all the detailed slides after this. Right, and then you want to use, after you set up high availability, you set up disaster recovery, you want to be able to scale your VM. You want to also make sure that you can load balance your VM, right? Essentially, you have multiple Hyper-V hosts running, and you want to make sure that you can move your VM using live migration when, let's say, one host is very busy, the other one is not. So you want to make it automatically. So the tool to do that is Virtual Machine Manager from System Center. Okay? All right, lots of stuff in the scaling portion, and we just packed so many things in there that for you guys to use. I'm going to move to the next one on the self-service, right? The first one is I mentioned earlier about creating template. This idea about creating template is not new. It's just that now we're moving that into a virtualized environment where we pre-built VM that has operating system In this case, we're going to have SQL Server in there as well. Guy's going to talk about what's the SysPrep enhancement they're going to have in 2014, right? Essentially allows you to build all this thing as a library so that to deploy it later, it's going to be much, much, much faster, right? So you don't have to install everything from scratch every time. So you can have your goal images, multiple goal images there that allows you to install maybe one image for reporting purposes, one for OLTP, one for data warehouse, I don't know what, right? But you can do that. So that's on the SysPrep portion. And Virtual Machine Manager can manage those for you guys very well. There's a concept of library there, right? Newly announced this week, Windows Azure Pack for Windows Server. How many of you know about this thing? Only one or two. So let me explain to you what it means. But have you guys seen Windows Azure user interface, how to create VM and all that stuff? How many of you know Windows Azure VM, the blue things on the left and then that kind of stuff? So we're going to bring that consistent experience on Microsoft Azure down to private cloud. Not only that, we're going to bring that experience to also service provider as well. So whether you are running in Microsoft Azure, whether you're running in your own private cloud, whether you run stuff from your hosting, your hosters, all of them, if they use this Windows Azure Pack for Windows Server, will give you the consistent experience, right? So it will make use of a lot of the Windows Server stuff, obviously, System Center. Right now, it's going to have a preview. You can download and try it out. When we release, I believe right now it's an add-on that you can install on top of your Windows and System Center, and you'll be able to manage those just like Windows Azure for you in your own enterprise. All right, this is powerful because some of you, especially large enterprise, large company, you want to have your own private cloud, right? And this will allow you to use the same user interface of Windows Azure within your firewall, and you don't have to worry about, like, you know, being charged with Microsoft and all that stuff. You just use your regular practice, which is paying the license and download this thing, install it yourself, and you can have it behind your firewall. Very, very, very powerful, right? So this will allow you to do many things. One of them is obviously automation, right? Allows end user to create VM as you want, things like that. Anything that you see on Windows Azure is available here, which is very powerful. Right, we continue going to make an enhancement on that as well. Let me move to the next one, which is the final portion. The same Windows Azure Pack not only allows you to do automation, but also allows you to measure the usage, assign costs to any of the VM that you have security component where you can assign multiple users within your organization, keep track of all of them, how much is their usage, things like that. And if your company has this practice of doing chargeback between your IT department to other department, you can make use of that as well, right? So not only keeping track, but also be able to have the good report, who's using what, which department using what the most. So look for Windows Azure Pack, right? Right now, actually this afternoon I went there. They allow us to basically go and sign up. It's not out there yet, so you get notified when it's already out, okay? So you're going to be in preview. It will be released in RTM very soon. All right. Next, I'm going to change gear. Right. I'm going to talk about the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. Right. This is the tool, first step. Right. I mentioned the first step. You need to find out what you have in your organization, what version of SQL, what version of other databases, and all that stuff. It's a free tool from Microsoft here. You go to Microsoft.com map. You can basically download this, right? And we continually update this thing. So now we got up to version 8.0 publicly. But today I'm going to demonstrate to you the future, right? Which is 8.5. Okay, 8.5 is in beta right now. And then we're probably going to release it in the next few months, right? We are running the beta program. If you're part of the Connect, you have access to the connect.microsoft.com, you probably can download this beta and then try it yourself. Okay? So I'm going to switch over to my demo box here. And let me just fire up 8.5. Okay, I already preloaded, the sample database and all that. You see the new user interface. You see a lot of the things that that we put in here. One of the new areas that we put in here is not only we allow you to scan your environment so that you know how many SQL Server in your environment and all kinds of things, but we also measure the performance and see which one that is eligible, this is good enough to move to Azure if you want to. Right, so it gives you a good report. I'll share with you some of the report. But for our purposes, we're going to go to the database tab here. And to collect inventory is quite easy. Just let me just quickly walk you through the user interface. So they're going to have a wizard here. And not only just can scan SQL Server, but any other stuff as well. But for our purposes, if I select SQL Server here, and let's say I just use the IP range. I'm not going to scan the whole thing, but just walk you through. So in here, I can just enter any IP range, right? Let's say it like that. Okay. Then ask me to create account. I can bypass the thing. And then by this time, if I click finish, then it basically it will just go and scan. Right? But I'm not going to do that because it takes a while to scan. What I'm going to show you is the result, right? This is the sample report that comes with it, and basically it shows the count, how many SQL Server that I had in my environment before. Out of the 216, 91 of them are Azure VM ready, meaning that I can move it directly to Azure if I want to, right? I also be able to scan other databases as well, okay? So if I click on any of this, it will give me more detail, how many of them in different version and things like that. And if I do a report, if I generate the report, it will give me Excel files, right? The Excel file looks similar to this. So it will give you, let me just see if I can. So it will give you, okay, how many of them running database services, integration services, and so on. Okay, you go to each of the instances of the database here. My computer name, the version, edition, if there's any, is it cluster or not, things like that. Very detailed, and what are the components as well. Right? Is it using a service pack, whatever, which a component which is analysis services or integration services and so on, right? Not only that, it gives me a more detailed database like the engine itself, the database instance property, for example, right? Each one of the property. How many of you, especially a DBA, you want to have this data, right? But it's very hard to collect. Sometimes you have to manually type and all that. Just run this tool, right? You will collect everything for you. You can just specify IP address range, right? Scan what you know, and then you keep this, right? So it's a very good reporting tool as well for you to keep, right? And obviously, it also has the Azure readiness that I'll talk about. Which one of the machine that is Azure ready, right? It will go and scan and see, okay, are those ready or not? And if not, then what do you need to do? What is that? Yeah, yes, you can do that as well. Yes. I guess you can do that, I guess. But that's not the primary purpose. The primary purpose is for you to be able to know, for you to do consolidation exercise, right? But you can do inventory. This is one. For a licensing thing? Okay, all right. I skipped that security when you do create account. That account is used to scan, right? You need to know how to be able to scan. So whatever accounts that you use, right, doesn't have to be a domain admin account, but it's some account that you can see the machines, right? Because it goes to the machine and scan the services. Oh, no, it's not. So you don't have to have that kind of stuff. So this is all of them are read-only operations, right? Just go in. It's using like I think I clicked too fast. It's using WMI to go and pull the data, right? So it's quite harmless that way, right? Yeah, there's many protocols for you to select as well. But it's a very good tool. Also, if you have other databases, it can scan, you know, what do you have in terms of MySQL, Oracle, and what else? Sybase, right? So you can actually inventorize, you know, everything in here as well, right? It's a very powerful tool, and it's free. You go to that website, Microsoft.com/map, that allows you to just grab this. It's very easy to use. You just go and scan and inventorize yourself, right? This is the first step that that you want to do for consolidation. Okay, let me switch back to the slide. Okay, so now I'm going to go through the Better Together scenario with you. And we're going to break it into scaling, performance, availability, storage, and management. Okay? All right. So the very, very first one, scaling. I mentioned earlier Hyper-V in Windows Server 2012 is basically increased amount of virtual processor to 64. It's 16 times than previous version of Windows. So now you can run up to 64 virtual processor and up to 1 terabyte of memory per VM. It's large, you know, a lot of the database application out there, you can run this, right? So basically, you can do a lot of those. If you're not doing virtualization, we also increase the number of logical processors. This is if you run it on the physical instance of SQL, right? So you can run up to 640 logical processor. A lot of our customers doing clustering on SQL, now you can do up to 64 nodes. Right? Why you want to do that? Because you consolidate all your databases together in one single place, one single giant cluster. You can go up to 64 now. Right? And then the number of VM, SQL Server VM per cluster is up to 8,000. Right? So now instead of having smaller machines, a lot of smaller machines, you might want to consolidate into a bigger machine, right? And run your SQL Server out of that cluster. So it's going to be more cost effective and all that. Right, so that's on the scaling portion. On the performance, there are a couple of things I want to highlight here. The first one is the support for NUMA architecture. Okay, NUMA architecture is nothing new. A lot of the servers out there has it. SQL Server supports it for a long time ago. It's just Hyper-V did not surface it before. So now in Windows Server 2012, within Hyper-V, actually, basically, it surfaced all the NUMA configuration, so SQL Server in the VM be able to use that, right? These two QoS or network and NIC teaming are Windows Server 2012 feature that allows you to basically have a consistent network bandwidth that you can pin for applications, different type of applications, right? So if you think about it, you don't want to have, let's say one application dominate all the network bandwidth, you can set the minimum and maximum, right? Guys are going to talk about it from SQL Server perspective, but this is Windows Server perspective. And then the next one, NIC teaming, is network interface card teaming. Allows you to do either combine multiple network card together and basically act as a single one so you can load balance, increase the bandwidth for SQL Server, or you can do it in a failover scenario where you can have one die, the other one can pick it up kind of stuff, right? So you can have very flexible way to configure those to increase performance on SQL Server, right? Next one, on availability, okay? There are a couple things here I want to highlight. The first one, cluster-aware updating. Basically, it's a Windows Server feature that allows you to update your cluster online, essentially doing rolling update. You will take one server out of the cluster, update those, and put it back in kind of thing, right? The next one, dynamic quorum, allows you to basically, I mean, SQL Server always on make use of quorum to decide, okay, which of the server is down, which one is up. In the past, we have to do it manually. In Windows Server 2012, there's a feature called dynamic quorum. It basically, according to one of the SQL CAT team, internal team, that run this in the biggest customer out there. They said it actually reduced up to 80% of the configuration needed for always on. So it's very, very powerful feature there from Windows Server perspective, right? I mentioned about Windows Server Core. It's a command line mode, essentially. With Windows Server 2012, you can switch back and forth between full UI, the regular mode, or the Windows Server Core mode. But we want you to basically go to the Windows Core mode when you run SQL Server in production, because the surface is much smaller, so you don't need to require a lot of patches, right? No more a lot of attacks, meaning that you increase the availability of the server itself, right? So definitely look at Windows Server Core. And I mentioned about the online VSDX resize earlier. It allows you to resize your VM machine without downtime. Okay? Let me move to the next one on the storage. This one I'm going to spend a longer time here. The SMB support is a very key feature in Windows Server 2012. Allows us to basically have SQL Server data files and log files in a remote file share. So it doesn't have to be direct attached disk anymore, or it doesn't have to be using SAN anymore, right? In fact, they improved the performance in Windows Server 2012 R2, actually going to have 30% more performance than Windows Server 2012. So definitely check this out, right? SMB support. It's actually going to decrease your storage costs. Okay. The next one is within VM now we can connect directly to fiber channel through your SAN devices, right? No longer using emulation, things like that. So it's going to be much faster access to your storage. And SQL Server is storage hungry, so it's, if you get access to your storage much faster, then you increase the performance, right? In SQL Server 2014, we will support REFS. This is the new resilient file system from Windows Server. It's very backward compatible with NTFS, but it has a lot of the background checksum processes that make sure that none of the files are corrupted and things like that. It will be able to recover quickly. So your SQL Server files, the data and log files, will not be corrupted, right? So essentially increase the protection there. Okay. Last one is very interesting here. Okay. How many of you use like EMC VNX kind of thing? Right? You probably pay quite a bit to be able to have that tier storage. Essentially, allows you to have a group of, let's say, a faster disk, SSD in this case. This is why I put SSD. And then your regular hard disk, right? Using the storage space, storage pool that Windows Server has, you can configure in such a way that it's automatically move data blocks from one place to another, depending on your SQL Server patterns, right? Either you run in OLTP or data warehouse, especially true in data warehouse, you have data that is historical, right? The one that is maybe old data, you don't access it that frequently, Windows Server will be able to move it automatically to the cold data portion of things. In regular disk, the one that you access very frequently, you automatically move it to the SSD tier, right? Very powerful feature, part of Windows Server 2012 R2. There's a demo in the booth downstairs, in Windows Server booth. Go to the storage area. A guy named Brian Matthew will be able to demonstrate that for you, right? It actually has a SQL Server workload running side by side. One is without, one is with tier storage. Increased performance tremendously, like 3 times or something like that, just using this feature. And it's part of Windows Server, right? So why not use it, okay? All right, so the last slide on Better Together is on manageability, right? One gentleman here in the front asked me about, hey, what can we use System Center tool to manage SQL Server? I mentioned a lot about Virtual Machine Manager and the new tool called App Controller. It's part of System Center that allows you to manage all your SQL Server VM, whether it's running on your own data center or running on your service provider data center, or running on Windows Azure. So the same tool allows you to manage all. You can move VM back and forth, right? It has a very good way for you to do that. So you just basically do a copy and paste kind of thing, right? Very, very easy to do, right? For monitoring, you have Operations Manager and Advisor. Operations Manager has been around for a while. We just continue to enhance the functionality. Advisor is something new. It lives in the cloud, but it has agent that you need to install on your SQL Server. It periodically basically collect data and send it to Microsoft, and we analyze it, and we send you alerts if we think something's about to go wrong. So it's a proactive monitoring tool, Advisor, that allows you to basically prevent disaster before it happens, right? Let's say this almost out of this space, blah, blah, your configuration is not optimum according to our best practice, we'll alert you that, right? Finally, Data Protection Manager is a tool for you to back up not only SQL Server, Windows Server, I think Exchange as well, into a single location, right? It's a centralized backup tool. In fact, now with the latest release, you can actually put it in Azure. So you don't have to basically buy your own storage. You can just put it there and rent the storage from us, right, essentially. Okay? This slide is just to show you that we have done benchmark with the latest Windows Server and SQL Server, right? The Hyper-V portion that runs up to 64 virtual processor. Essentially, you see here, this is the number of virtual processor here. As we increase the number of transactions in green, increase almost linearly as we go up number of virtual processor. So this thing can scale, basically, Hyper-V, right? And it's, as it scales, the average transaction response actually drops, right? So it's going to be much performance, much higher performance, right? So read more of this in the white paper that I listed here. You can download this deck afterwards, right? Essentially, we'll tell you that as you run SQL Server in Hyper-V, as you increase the virtual processor, the performance is almost linear. Okay, this is the one benchmark that we test. Okay, how many of you heard about this thing? 1 million IOPS from a single VM running Hyper-V, basically SQL Server. In SQL Server, we measure things by IOPS, right? And Guy's going to demonstrate to you the IOP resource governor as well. Basically, in Windows Server 2012, with single VM, we can go up to 1 million IOPS, right? So no questions whatsoever on the performance. You can run all your SQL Server stuff in Hyper-V with no questions, right? Okay, a few more slides, just quick comparison, because marketing always like to show comparison, right? If you look at SQL Server and Oracle, just from licensing perspective, SQL Server, you license individual VMs, right? You just basically, if you install SQL Server in one VM, you just license that, you can do that. If you move it to, you can move it back and forth from one host to another, we don't charge you extra. Oracle doesn't recognize that, and Oracle would like you to basically license everything. Right. There are details in there. It's actually a block from different third parties, so you can actually read through it and see the difference, right, between running Oracle in virtualized environment or running SQL Server in virtualized environment. That's why Oracle doesn't push virtualization as much, because they push only the physical instance installation because of this limitation that they put on the virtualization. We don't have that kind of thing in SQL Server. Okay. And then if you compare Hyper-V and VMware, a lot of the things are on par in terms of the performance scalability. We can both go up to 64 and things like that, right? However, if you implement SQL Server using always-on clustering, there are, I just want to give you guys aware, but there are some things that VMware doesn't support, right? There are details in here, essentially. If you run SQL Server in VMware using failover clustering, there are things that they don't support, right? You go to their KB article that I listed here, and you can see the difference. That's how you can choose which one is better and all that, right? Okay, so with that, I think I'm going to transfer to Guy. He's going to talk to you about SQL Server 2014, okay?
Thanks, Damadi. Mm-hmm. So as Damadi introduced you to the basic, so I think he's mentioned most of these features that we're adding to SQL 2014. I think there was some speculation before this week as to how big a release the next version of SQL Server would be. And I think you've probably seen a lot of announcements now. I'm going to go into some detail on some of the announcements that you may not have seen so much information about in this session. We've targeted several features specifically at private cloud, and also some features that are just going to run very well in a large SQL Server instance based in a private cloud. And then also there's several features that we've targeted specifically at migration, hybrid cloud, migrating to public cloud, and also using public cloud services from on-premise or in VMs. So things like backup to Azure and cloud backup. So I'm going to start with SysPrep. Now, we've been talking about SysPrep Damadi and I over the last few years have been doing private cloud sessions and talking about SysPrep. And we sometimes get comments like, SysPrep's a little bit slow. I may as well just do a silent install. Or SysPrep doesn't let you set up all the components. Actually, I should probably check first. How many people are actually familiar with SQL Server SysPrep? So perhaps I should explain what we use it for first. What you can do is if you're, say, using Virtual Machine Manager and you want to create a load of VHDs that you can just deploy and SQL Server is working, you can use SQL Server SysPrep. And what it does a fix-up of the install once you deploy that VM. And one of the problems with it was it didn't install all the components of SQL Server. So if you're kind of installing the main components, you're fine. But if you wanted like analysis services, integration services, then you may as well do your silent install. The other thing was it didn't support clusters. And in a private cloud, very often you want to just be able to deploy your instance and have it work in a clustered environment. So we fixed all of those things. We made it way faster. I think it's something like 6 to 8 times faster now. It supports all the SQL Server components plus the shared features. And it also just works in a clustered environment. So now SysPrep is, if you're creating VHDs that you want, like in self-service private cloud, for example, you want to just deploy them, or in Windows Azure, now using SysPrep, it's a much more attractive proposition. Another enhancement, particularly if you've got, let's say you have an active data set which is bigger than the amount of memory that you can afford in your virtual machine or in your physical machine, but you do have SSD devices, then the buffer pool extension in SQL 2014 is going to be very useful. There's no risk of data loss. It's effectively like a second buffer pool using SSD storage. So it can dramatically improve your performance. It only uses clean pages in that buffer pool, so if it fails, it fails gracefully. You don't actually get corrupted data. And it's very easy to configure. There's an example syntax just showing altering the server configuration, setting a buffer pool extension of 50 GB. You don't have to restart SQL Server to do that. You can actually switch it on and off on the fly. Was that going to be your question? that's typically the next question, but no, you don't. It's very dynamic. So I think this one's going to be very useful, particularly for these large kind of read-only data sets. And then another enhancement that we get requested a lot, particularly like some of our large banks that just want their system to be running all the time, is the online ops enhancement. Here, before you couldn't do a single partition online index rebuild. You had to shut down the server. You couldn't just run it and rebuild it. So you can do that now. So for a single partition, you can now rebuild it. And then you can also manage the lock priority for table switch and online index rebuild. So a table switch, like you're moving a table partition to another table, for example, or you're moving data to another partition. Now you can manage the lock priority. So if you've got blocking transactions, now you can set what to do in those cases. So before, you would just wait if there's a blocking transaction and you couldn't start any new transactions. Now you can. So now you can say, wait this long and then kill the transactions, or wait this long and then stop the online index rebuild, for example. So you've got several options like that that you can now do, and this can really improve throughput. You no longer get into that blocked situation. So a lot of our customers that just need those online operations really have been asking for this for years. What else? Resource governance. Who's familiar here with the SQL Server Resource Governor? Anyone ever heard of it? This is great for multi-tenancy. So if you're running a SQL Server instance, and you, let's say you're a hoster, and you're offering a database service, and to get the best cost, to get the highest density, you could say run a single instance of SQL Server, but you've got multiple clients. So it's a multi-tenant situation. The problem there is, if one of those tenants is doing a lot of work, it can affect the other tenants. It's that noisy neighbor problem. SQL Server introduced resource governor in SQL Server 2008, and you could govern memory and CPU. You could put memory and CPU into a set of resource pools, and then that provided a level of CPU and memory isolation for multiple workloads running in a single instance. And the next request, and it's been requested for years, was can you govern I/O as well? Because if you could, then you've got a truly isolated instance, isolated kind of packet that then a customer could feel like they have a specific set of hardware and it's all theirs and other customers can't affect it. So that's what's been added in SQL Server. For now it's got I/O. So I'm going to do a quick demo of what that looks like. So let's switch to the demo. And let's switch to this one. Yes. OK, so here's the premise. Let's suppose I'm a hoster. And I've got two customers who are paying just the cheapest level for a database service. And I've got a single instance. So I want to provide a database server for all of my customers. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a SQL Server resource pool for each of these customers. So I'm going to do create resource pool, customer one pool, customer two pool. Let me know if you want me to zoom in a bit, if this is too hard to see at the back. So I'm going to create a resource pool and a workload group. Now, the way that you sort connections into a resource pool or a workload group is you create what's known as a classifier function. This is just some T-SQL that you can run for every incoming connection and say where to send this incoming connection. So I'm going to set up this classifier function, and it's really just going to, I've only got two customers, it's going to send one to each resource pool. So I'll do that. Now it's ready to go, so I'm going to switch the resource governor on. And I'm going to do one last thing, which is I'm going to set up a minimum IOPS per volume here. Let's see if I can increase that a bit. I'll set up a minimum IOPS per volume and a maximum IOPS per volume. Now, if I didn't set this, these are pretty much like the default values without setting them. The reason I want to set them, though, is because I want the work to go through the resource governor, even when it's at its default value, so that you can see in the perfmon what's happening when I run a workload. So I'm going to make these changes. So having done that, I'm now going to start a workload. Here's my customer. He's doing lots of random reads. The reason we chose a workload that's doing lots of random reads, it's because it gives us a nice pure demo. That way I can just govern I/O. I don't have to go and govern memory and CPU as well. So running this, he's got the whole system to himself. So he's running like over 1,000 transactions per second, pretty much using all the I/O on the system. So what I'll do is I'll now start another workload. So now this customer's also doing lots of random reads. They've both got 16 threads. And these workloads are pretty much going to even out. What I'm actually measuring here is IOs. So you'll see they'll fight it out for a little bit. But basically, they're going to end up both going to get less than they originally wanted. But it's fair. They're both getting the same amount. So that's fine. They're both paying the same amount. They're both getting the same amount of work. But supposing this guy, customer one, suppose he has a bigger workload. I'm going to increase his workload to 32 threads, all doing these random reads. Now it kind of gets a little bit unfair. They're both paying the same amount, but this guy has really been affected by the other guy working. So he doesn't like this. So what he's going to do, I'm going to introduce this premium service as a hoster, and he's going to pay a bit extra because he wants some guaranteed minimum rate of I/O. This is what you can do now in SQL 2014 that you couldn't do before. So what I'll do is I will alter the resource pool with min IOPS per volume 750. The max is still just the same as it was before. So this is customer two pool because he's just given us some more money. And what happens is he actually, the blue workload starts edging ahead now. Even though the other workload has 32 threads, the blue workload gets this guaranteed minimum of 750 IOPS per volume. Is able to, on average, produce more work. So workload 2 is now bigger. Now, if I were to stop this workload, it goes back to normal. Customer 1 gets the whole system again. But you know, if they're paying much less, maybe they shouldn't be getting the whole system when other people are not doing anything. Because the problem is, then they're going to phone in and complain when they do get less. So what you could do now is you could set the maximum IOPS. So you could cap that maximum work that that customer can do. So I'm going to set that to 600. So now I've set this maximum value. So even without customer 2 working, you can probably see from the performance monitor that it's just now it's capped at a certain value. And now if I start this customer 2's workload again, they're not competing so much. It's actually much more of a predictable experience. So we've achieved that resource isolation in this multi-tenant environment. So that's what you can do with Resource Governor in SQL 2014. I think it's great that now memory, CPU, and I/O, you can all govern in that sense. So I'll switch back to the slides and move on to the next feature. So now one of the hybrid features. You've heard a lot about SQL Server running in a Windows Azure VM, but how do you actually put it there? There's various steps to go through. There's various caveats and gotchas. It's not too bad, but you know, there's potentially a lot of homework you need to do to get that experience. One feature that we're introducing in SQL Server 2014 is a wizard that really just lets you enter a set of steps like your login credentials to Windows Azure. You follow those steps. It can create a brand new VM with your database migrated over from on-premise. Or you could migrate it over to an existing virtual machine. You can all do all that from SSMS. So that's just a nice wizard-like experience. It's going to be really good, particularly for like DBAs who are new to Azure. They just want to move it over. They don't really want to go into all the details. All those details get taken care of behind the scenes. So I think this is really going to help in terms of on-ramps, and you're making that migration easy. And the only really limiting factor on the time it takes to transfer, it's optimized as much as it can be. It's just the database size that's the only limiting factor. Another one you've probably heard of. Has anyone actually tried SQL Server Backup to Cloud in SQL Server 2012? You've only been able to since January the 24th. That was when it was introduced in Cumulative Update 2. And what's nice is you've got instant offsite backup backed by an SLA for the data. So that's potentially a nice feature. And it was introduced in CU2. I've heard very good things about the performance. We really optimized that performance of writing directly to a blob. You know, we spin up a load of threads. We back off if there's any throttling from Azure storage. So it's a really good way to write directly to Azure blobs. It was introduced in CU2, but CU4 has just come out, and I would definitely recommend that you use SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1 CU4. We've done some more performance improvements. We've improved the way it handles if it fails with an error. We've improved the way it cleans up blobs after it and fixed a few other things. So definitely CU4 would be the release to try this in. As you can see, it's very simple to use. You create a credential which has your storage credential, a SQL Server credential, which has your storage access key. SQL Server credentials have been around for a while for things like password management, et cetera, credential management. And then you can just simply do a backup database MyDB to URL equals. and then you say with credential. And most of the backup arguments like compression, et cetera, work just fine in this environment. And restore is equivalent syntax as well. So this was introduced in 2012. In CU4, we also added PowerShell commandlet support. So all of this is in SQL 2014 as well. One thing that's being added to SQL 2014 is automatic cloud backup. So here, suppose you're managing lots of instances, and you don't want to set up a backup schedule for all of these instances. You just want to give your storage credentials and say, my retention policy is 14 days. Just give a retention policy. They're the only bits of information you need to give. And SQL Server can decide when it should back up, such that you can do a point-in-time restore. And it will just back up your whole instance, or you can select specific databases for it to automatically back up when it needs to. That can actually be more economical for storage as well. Rather than just, say, doing a full backup every night or, you know, going to a fixed schedule, it does it when it needs to. And it'll do an incremental backup when it needs to. So that's potentially a powerful feature, particularly if you are managing a lot of virtual machines, say, and you just want them backed up, you want it taken care of, such that if you make a mistake, you can restore from a point in time. So that's coming in SQL 14 CTP2. Now, I'll mention one other feature. This one is really, it's another feature to help you migrate a database into the cloud. So we're calling it SQL Server with Windows as your storage integration. What you can do here is you can create a database, and if you use the SQL syntax to create a database, you can say file equals, log equals, and you can specify a file where to put those. If you like, you can specify a blob. So your compute instance could be running on-premise or in a VM, but your data is actually stored in Windows Azure. You may think, well, what if it's a performance-intensive application? What about the latency writing to the log? And sure, if it's you need a really fast latency writing to the log, maybe you wouldn't use this feature. But there are some cases where perhaps you would. I mean, suppose you're in a Windows Azure VM already. So it's got pretty fast latency writing to the log. Suppose that VM's a little bit getting a bit busy. To move that database now from one VM to another, you simply do a detach and then an attach in the other VM, and no data was moved. So you've effectively instantly moved a database. Similarly, suppose you lose a machine. Because the data is actually in the cloud backed by an SLA, if you lose your compute instance, you just attach to it again from another compute instance. So there's some potentially very powerful possibilities there. And another powerful possibility is if you want to encrypt your data in the cloud, but you want your encryption keys on-premise. Again, you can do that for the first time in this environment. So it's not necessarily going to be for every workload, but for some workloads where you need that convenience, then it could be very useful. We also see it as part of a roadmap. We can build on technology like this there's some really interesting features that we're working on for future versions that's built on top of this. I'm going to give a demo of this now, and you can see how it looks. So let's... I'm not sure I'm pressing the right button. Okay. So back to my demo machine. I'm going to go to another VM. Here, I'm going to create a database with the storage in Windows Azure. To do that, again, we use SQL Server credentials to manage the authentication to that storage. And for this, it works at a storage container level, and we use a shared access signature. Now, a lot of the third-party storage explorers, you can generate a shared access signature for a container, or you can do it using the REST API. So I'm going to create this credential. Hopefully you can see it okay. Now I've created the credential. I can take a look, make sure I've created my credential. So now I'm going to create this database. So it's simply just a regular create database statement, except the file names are now pointing to blobs in this storage container. I've actually got the Explorer here. Let's see. If I zoom in, here's the Azure Storage Explorer. I don't know why I'm pointing to my own laptop. The Azure Storage Explorer in SSMS. Right now, I've got a container called data, and I've just got one file in it. That's where I'm going to create this database. So I will run this. And and good it created. So now if I select from Sysmaster files, I can see that if I go all the way along, we actually added a column to this, credential ID. So if you're troubleshooting, you can go, when you create this data file in the cloud, you can relate it back to an authentication credential. So now I'll refresh databases. And there's my database. That's all very well, but suppose you want to encrypt it. How are you going to move it if you encrypt it? Well, as long as you back up the encryption key and restore it somewhere else, that's not a problem. So I'll do that. I've already backed it up, and I'm going to encrypt this database. So I'll create a database encryption key. This is just using the TDE, Transparent Data Encryption feature of SQL Server. Anyone use it by any chance? You do? Yeah, a few people. So I will now alter the database and set encryption on. And there it is. It's now an encrypted database. So if I insert some data, this is all encrypted. But it's transparent. So if I select it from this session, I have the encryption certificate. So there's my data. Now suppose I want to move this to another machine. So I will just detach it. Also, this machine could have crashed, effectively the same thing. But in this case, it hasn't. I'm just going to detach it. So now the database is gone, but the files, actually, I didn't refresh the files. If I refresh the files, they're there. Let's just zoom in there. These are the data files for this database. So now I can switch to another instance. This instance, I've already prepared it by creating a credential and importing the encryption certificate. So I just need to create the database, and the key thing here is the for attach, because the file's already there. So I'm just going to go and attach to it. So there we are. This database is now in another instance. No data was moved. It could have been a very big database, but it's that simple. I just reattach to it. And then just to show that it works with encryption, I'll just do a select. And good, there's my data. So that's all I'm going to show in the XStore integration. It's a potentially very useful feature. I think it's one that's going to have a lot of future. So I'll hand back to you, Damadi, to wrap up.
So to wrap up this session, you guys to try virtualized SQL Server, obviously. There's a lot of customers that move or running SQL Server on Hyper-V already today, either migration from VMware or we win them over from VMware. You can look at those case studies. I want to highlight this paper. We spent quite a lot of time here. It's very comprehensive white paper that we produce in conjunction with Windows Server team. That basically outline what we just talked about today as far as private cloud scenario and things like that, especially on the best practice, how do we virtualize and managing SQL Server in Hyper-V environment, right? There are a lot of best practices in there, starting from the basic, we call it fabric, from your compute, storage, and network perspective, as well as making sure that how do you configure high availability and disaster recovery, right? And each of the configurations, whether it's from Hyper-V perspective or whether it's from SQL Server perspective, and how do you manage it afterwards, right? So it's one comprehensive white paper. Definitely it's updated to the latest version of SQL Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012. This is something that you can use today in your production environment and definitely do that, right? This is equivalent of hiring like MCS or consultant to help you set this thing up, right? Okay. So with that, we're going to end the presentation here. I think we have about 5 minutes left. Good, if you have any Q&A questions, you can come up here. We can answer your questions. Okay.